first speaker is Richard Denton. And the title of his talk is Artificial Intelligence and the Bible Translator's Assistant. And so we'll try to do like a 20-minute presentation, 5 minutes for questions, and then 5 minutes for setup and tear down. So Richard, it's all yours. And are you wearing the...
Yeah, I am right here.
Perfect.
Hi, thank you. So I work with an organization called All the Word Bible Translators, which is in the U.S., but we also work closely in association with Wycliffe Canada. So the problem is that there is a very large number of languages that still need Bible translations, about 4,000. And so in order to translate these in a reasonable time, like in a lifetime, we need to speed up the process because we're going too slow. So I'm going to talk about the difference between an AI approach and our approach, but then how we are using AI to jumpstart our approach. So AI translation builds a training data set. So you have a source text and a target text. And so then the computer learns by an unguided way to transform between the source text and the target text. So it requires this good training data set, but once you have that, it doesn't need much human input to create the model. Ours is very different. We're using a rules-based approach, so it ends up with a deterministic output. There are rules that supply the words and make substitutions of words and supply the word order in sentences and the grammar and rules that can convert a structure that we write in a certain way to a way that is written in another language. So it's a very different approach. It has the advantage that it doesn't require a lot of training data. You can just go from scratch. And it tends to be very semantically or meaning, semantic means meaning, very semantically accurate. But it does require some human editing for naturalness. So this is a sketch of our translation process. The parts in the tan, the parts in tan, like here and here, those only have to be done once. The parts in blue have to be done for each target language that we want to translate into. So we analyze the text, and that's the part that I'm working on, to get the meaning of the Bible into the computer in a form that the computer can understand. And then there's our translation software, which we have to program. And you combine our analysis of the Bible text with the vocabulary and grammar of the target language and run that through our software. You get a draft translation. It's edited by mother tongue speakers for naturalness mostly, but also as a final check on accuracy, and we get a draft translation. So we kind of picture our system as a Bible translation superhighway. It speeds up the translation process. It requires a lot of work to get it going, but once you have it, it can help people to get where they want to go fast. So as an example, we've used this in the Philippines for a language called Etamigini. And the speed of creating a draft translation was more than a factor of 5 greater than the manual technique. Now, unfortunately, there are other parts of the translation process like consultant and community checking besides the draft. So for the whole process, our tests indicate that our method speeds up the entire process by about a factor of 2. We found some unexpected results when people were working with our system. Mother tongue translators prefer working with our system because they can start with a translation in their own language. And they found that their team cooperation was actually enhanced. And that's because typically you'd have a team of people and some maybe elder or something who was drafting the translation. And then the other people didn't feel comfortable criticizing it because of the status of people in the group. But when they look at a computer translation, they don't have any problem criticizing that. So what I'm going to talk about is this process that I'm involved in, which we call analysis, which is getting the meaning of the Bible into the computer. I actually made this plot with AI art. And it was interesting because I learned a lesson from it. It didn't actually give me what I told it to do. So it gave me some features that were similar, but some features which are very different. Like I said, I want him to be passing the Bible into the computer screen. And it didn't do that. So, you know, it showed me that there are some limitations. So I'm going to talk about our process of analyzing the meaning of the Bible. So here, this is John 3:16. And currently, we're starting with something like this at the top. So this looks very much like English. There are only some slight differences. We have this indication of a paragraph. And then the material in between the less than, and greater than is implicit material. So it's likely to be correct. You know, when we say God loved the earth is the literal text, it really means the people of the earth. So this is something that the translators can, it's not in the literal Bible, but it can be included by the translators. When we have a passive sentence, will not be destroyed, we have to indicate the agent because many languages don't allow passive constructions. So if there's a language that doesn't allow a passive, it could convert this to God will not destroy the people who believe in the Son. So we have these constraints so that we can go into a number of different languages. Then from this version, we convert to this version. And this is the version that we can actually input into our computer. And then there's some adjustment, as I'll describe. But it has some extra notation. It says underscore dynamic expansion, underscore implicit active agent. And the subordinate clauses are marked out in brackets, square brackets, so that the computer can understand the sentence structure. So after we have that second form, we read that into the analyzer of our program, and it creates something like this. Typically, there are errors that someone has to manually correct, and there are features that have to be added, things that aren't in the English but have to be understood by the computer. For instance, sometimes there might be the same word, but it means a different person here and than a person there. So we have to indicate all these things, and you can click on these phrases and words and enter features. Oh, okay. This is the final semantic representation for John 3:16. So in this form, it's very hard to understand, and so we don't work on it that way, but this represents all the information in the semantic representation. So how do we use AI? Now, first of all, I'd like to say we're doing experiments where we use AI directly. But it requires some special conditions. If you have a very good translation of the Bible that's in a language that's closely related linguistically to the language you want to translate into, and you have a large amount of text that's already been translated, say you translated the New Testament into the new language, then AI can be useful, as is, you know. And we're doing experiments with that. But in the general case, where you're starting out with a new language where there isn't any translation, Or where there isn't a good translation that's closely related linguistically, then our system can be useful. So what we're doing with AI now is we're using it for suggestions about how to write the text. Unfortunately, it's never good enough for our purposes, so we always have to make corrections. We have to be careful to avoid mistakes. So this part here is for the techie people who know about AI. We started with a large language model that included an encoder and decoder, but we found better results when we used ChatGPT, which just has a decoder. We think this may be because our semantic representations are based on English, so it's not like going into a language independent form and then to the new language. But we don't know for sure, but that's our thought. So let's go back to this point. So this is the English-like text, most English-like text, and then there's this part that we will read into our computer program. We're using two AI programs. We're using an AI program to give us suggestions for this. Then we're using another AI program to convert from this to this. In both cases, we have to make corrections. So I'm going to give you, how am I doing on time?
You have 7 minutes.
Okay, so I'm going to give you, show you a couple of verses that we worked on recently. These are from Deuteronomy. This is Deuteronomy 12:19. This is the NIV, so this is a well-known translation. The Lord your God will cut off before you the nations you are about to invade and dispossess. But when you have driven them out and settled in their land, then the sentence continues into the next verse. One of the things, although there are some exceptions where we allow a sentence to go across a verse boundary, normally we don't allow that in our system. So these two versions solve that. You see you have a period at the end of the sentence here. So this is, first of all, we have an AI model where we trained on the NIV, going to the English-generated text from our program for all the Bible texts that we had already translated. So it's a conversion to what we want. Now we use that here using the NIV going to Deuteronomy, which was not in our training data set because we hadn't done Deuteronomy yet. So even though it's the same translation as our source text, we're using it for a new section of the Bible. This is with the NIV Reader's Edition, and this is our final text that we agreed on for this. So I'd like you to compare this and this, and if you see anything that seems to be missing in this second column. Can everybody read it?
Dispossess. I mean, you attack. If that doesn't cause them to leave the land, I guess that implies that.
Yeah.
A little bit of a shorthand for what's really going to happen.
Yeah, that's right. But it has attack and invade. I would agree. It doesn't really represent that. Anything else?
The who in the last sentence.
Yeah. So it's not very explicit about the people driving out the people who are there. Another thing is settled. It doesn't have anything about this last part, and settled in their land. So this is a case where we looked at this and it doesn't look very satisfactory. We actually found that this version looked better. And you can see it has at the end, and you'll live in this land. You'll force those people to leave this land. And also has take, which I'm kind of seeing a similar meaning in dispossess. So there are several things about this. Now, cut off, that's metaphorical, cut off those people. We do allow that, and we actually put it in to the final version, but we only use that in what we call a literal alternate. sometimes we have a literal version and a dynamic version, and then the translator can choose what he wants. Some other things, before you, that's not a sense of before that we use. Our befores always have to do with time. There's about to, they're about to invade. That's represented here. You'll soon attack. And then we don't have a word for dispossess, so we have to represent that some different way. And we don't have a word for drive them out, to drive out. So although this was better, we made some changes. So we are using the soon take. You will soon take the land of the nations that you will invade. So we put back invade because even though based on most of our translations up to this point, the test training data didn't have many examples of invade, but we do actually have that in our vocabulary. Then we have a literal alternate. The Lord your God will cut off those nations, but we add a dynamic alternate to explain the meaning. The Lord your God will cause you to destroy those nations. So we're keeping in the dynamic version, it's actually the Israelites who are destroying them, but we're keeping the causality of the agency of God, that he's causing that. And then you'll force those people to leave. So that's the driving out idea. And you'll settle there. 3 minute warning, okay? As a second example, we have, if a prophet or one who foretells by dreams appears among you and announces to you a sign or wonder, and then it goes on and on, and says, let us follow other gods, you must not listen to the words of that prophet or dreamer. Okay, can you see anything wrong in this one? Yeah, so this is wrong. You know, it says listen to him. Now we may be able to correct this because it has something to do with the method we used doing verse by verse. But that is the wrong meaning. So we have to be very careful to avoid the wrong meaning. Now, the prophet here, prophet in our system means a God's prophet, you know, a real prophet. So we could use, it is a false prophet, what the Bible calls a false prophet. But we don't really want to say false prophet here because at the point of this verse, we don't know if it's a God's prophet or a false prophet. You have to read farther in order to find that. So what we actually did is we rewrote it. If a person who says that person tells God's messages to people or that he understands the meaning of dreams comes to you, he might announce to you that a sign or a thing that will amaze people will happen. So in this case, we actually didn't use these very much. We kind of did it from scratch. So sometimes it's useful and sometimes it's not useful. So in summary, the Bible Translator's Assistant is a rules-based Bible translation program that requires a pre-analyzed Bible text. AI has been useful in some cases for providing draft versions for our semantic representations. But because we want a very accurate Bible text, we have to carefully examine the AI text and correct it where there are errors. And this is our contact information. And I guess this is time for questions.
Thank you, speaker. Mm-hmm. If you have any questions, please ask. And maybe you just repeat a summary of the question for the recording.
Sure.
Before you answer. And keep your questions crisp if you can, but we're small. Discussion for the next 5 minutes or so.
Yeah, I'm finding similarity between the quirks that you see, and I use Google Translate to translate Hebrew into English. And if I try and translate maybe two paragraphs, sometimes one or two sentences don't get translated. Do you have any thoughts about that you've learned about by using this program and when it's not translated?
I don't know why it does that. And, you know, that's one thing about AI is, you know, it's hard to understand exactly what's happening because it's based on all these neural connections that nobody figures out what they mean. So it's hard to know. I don't know why.
Is everyone able to hear the questions?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
the question was, he saw problems in translating from Hebrew to English using Google Translate, and sometimes parts of the text were not translated. Okay, the question was, for our system, the Bible Translator's Assistant, are the rules generated by people or are they automatically generated? The answer is, up to this point, they have been entered entirely manually, but we are experimenting with using AI to jumpstart that process also. You know, we're trying every way we can to try to speed up our process. And so right now it takes, would probably take between a half a year and a year to enter the language data needed for a new language. And then after that, the translation is much faster. But you have to get that language information into the computer first in order to use our program.
Go to the slide about John 3:16. So I'm just wondering where you get the meaning from, because I'm not a New Testament scholar, but my understanding is that verse, the word used for God so loved, is the word, Greek word, cosmos. So it isn't really about people, it's about the entire creation, you know, cosmos being the original Greek word in 3:16. So here it's directed towards people rather than the entirety of creation. So unless I'm wrong about that, but I'm just wondering. So this seems to be a reduction of the scope of the world as it originally appears in the Greek. So I'm just wondering how this meaning is arrived at, and whether you consult the original New Testament Greek, or whether you have people manually put this in, or how that meaning was arrived at.
Yeah, I don't know if I buy that, because the context has, it's about saving people. But, and I would have to look into that to see, but I'm glad you pointed out. What we do is we use English translations mostly, but we can also look at Greek. And then we have translation sources, like our major translation sources from SIL, Summer Linguist, Institute of Linguistics. And so it's like a commentary. And we have another handbook put out by the United Bible Society. So those are the sources that we look at.
Okay. Disclaimer, I'm not a Greek scholar.
So yeah.
You're right, it is the word cosmos, which now means the whole universe.
Yeah.
At that time, it sometimes meant Earth.
And the common translation is the world.
Right. Yeah. Any other final? We have a bit of time yet.
I have another question. Okay. So maybe you said it and I missed it, but why NIV translation and not the other?
Okay, so the question is, why are we using NIV? Well, first of all, we're not totally using NIV. We used it to train our AI model. And we look at different texts. Like in that last verse, we had a version translated from the Easy English Bible, which I didn't point that out, but it was there. But historically, The guy who started this project depended on NIV a lot. So some of our texts are kind of more heavily influenced by that than other Bible translations. And it's one of the translations that we encourage people to look at. We also encourage them to look at the NASB, which tends to be more literal and also shows implicit text marked in italics, so it's useful. So it's just one of the texts that that we use as a source, but it's not the only one.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I have another practical question. those 4,000 languages, how many people does that represent? And it's taking too long. Part of that is agglomeration of people groups into the bigger population, like in China, you know, everybody had to learn Mandarin, but then their heart language is a local language. So how many people don't have a Bible yet and also don't even have a, shall we say, for that nation language that they could use a Bible for?
Okay, so the question was, I talked about 4,000 languages, but how many people does that represent, and what fraction of the Bible do they have access to? And I can't really answer that question. The 4,000 number is from SIL's surveys, I'm taking for granted. But I would say that it's although it's a majority of the languages still need Bible translations, according to these surveys, it's a minority of the population. So in most cases, in many of these languages, it's maybe thousands, ten thousands of people. There is a language we're working on that's millions of people, which is in an area of the world where there's a lot of resistance to the gospel. So I'm not going to talk about specific region, but so that's another issue. So there are some languages that have millions of speakers that don't have the Bible yet. And even the ones that have the Bible, it may just be the New Testament. So there's a need for a lot of translation.
Let's thank our speaker. Thank you.
Okay.